Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Seamless connections with Ireland's number one broadband provider.
Now, surgeries shut down as hospitals go on to a COVID war footing. So reads the front of the Irish Independent this morning. And for more on all aspects of COVID, we're joined now by CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. Good morning to you, Paul. One of the starkest headlines I recall seeing throughout the course of this pandemic. How bad are the situations around the country in our hospitals?
Good morning, Ciara. Yeah, I mean, I would like to reflect here. I think it's been well described this week how difficult the situation is in hospitals, but I'd equally like to describe just more on the actions that we are taking to mitigate many of the risks and the impacts that we expect to see in the coming weeks. But ultimately, yes, we, as of last night, 611 people in hospital with COVID and 300 in ICU, 118 people overall. So, significant impact, and particularly in terms of the ICU. If you look back to January when we had 200 people in ICU, that was about 10% of our COVID patients, whereas now 20% of our COVID patients are actually in ICU. So that's a severe draw on our ICU capacity and resourcing. But look, I just want to reassure your listeners also what we are doing to mitigate those risks. And it's a combination of, I wrote out the system yesterday, a combination of actions we're taking. Firstly, in relation to utilisation of private hospitals to give us extra capacity. We had been using about 900 to 1,100 bed days per week. And we will be increasing that up to a potential of about 2,800, 3,000. We are taking actions with each of the hospitals to see and identify what extra surge capacity we can put in place in terms of redeployment of resources to create extra ICU beds and support the system and putting those together. But equally, it's a range of initiatives in our community as well to relieve the pressure on a hospital system at this point in time. So a combination of redeployment, we will have some extra recruitment between now and the year end, but we do have to take immediate and urgent actions. And some of that does revolve around elective care, where we will have to prioritise urgent elective care.
I think that's the one people are mostly worried about, Paul, that I suppose the non-COVID related healthcare stopping, surgeries stopping, people who maybe are desperate in need of outpatients or admissions electively, that's all going to stop. Do we have an idea for how long we might have to put the hold on non-COVID related healthcare?
I think the reality of it is it's actually been taking place over the last couple of weeks. So hospitals would be making their own judgments and decisions on a site-by-site basis. What's really become quite precarious at the minute is the issue around some of the bigger hospitals, what we would describe as our Model 4 hospitals. So what we are saying, and they are saying with us too as well, over the next 14 days to try keep a primary focus on urgent care, COVID care, ICU care, the intense care that we need to do, but obviously urgent care in terms of cancer care, cardio care, we'll be always saying. And that's where the capacity of the private hospital is giving us and will give us some relief in terms of the current
agreement. Do you believe, as the head of the HSE, Paul, that enough has been done to increase capacity over the last year and a half in our health service?
I think, look, this is always difficult. When we have increased capacity all across the health service.
But is it enough?
But if you can just, yeah, but just describe it enough in context of what you are seeing with all health systems all across Europe, some of the best resourced and well-respected and well-funded hospital systems all across Europe under significant duress. From our perspective, we've increased our resourcing in the health service by over 11,000 over the past 18 months. We have put in place extra bed capacity, but I think in our acute hospital system, and we will put more in during the winter plan, but equally it is about the initiatives that we put in place in the community to relieve the pressure on the hospital system, and it is about more home help hours that we're putting in place. It is about more therapies taking place. It is about more outpatients being addressed in the community. So we have put capacity in place, but any level of any health administration under the level of admissions that we are seeing related to COVID would be under significant duress.
Okay, let's move on to the booster campaign. Obviously, new guidelines on boosters. Everybody over the age of 50 is entitled to one. Over the age of 16 with health issues is entitled to one. I think there is still a lot of confusion. I mean, I'm 50. I haven't heard anything. Am I going to get a call? Is somebody going to text me, or do I need to turn up? Or is it going to be rolled out in a step-by-step way, the way the initial vaccine rollout happened?
Yeah, and I'm glad because, yes, there's no doubt there is people very anxious as more people are recommended for the booster vaccine by the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. Firstly, to say, look, there's nearly almost half a million people have received, 490,000 as of this morning, have received their booster, or indeed for those who are immunocompromised, have received a third dose. So that's very significant progress that we've been working away on. It is slightly different and a little bit more complex than the vaccination programme. I'll just try to make it simple. There is a criteria where you must be 5 months since your second dose before you're eligible for this booster vaccine. So we will be a lot of communications out to people to explain that to them. So for example, 60s have been approved in the last few weeks, we are working through those 60s, but not everybody, because you'll be familiar with the AstraZeneca, many people under 60s will not be at that 5 month gap just yet. So it will be a process between now and December where we'll be addressing a vast majority of those who have been approved, but there will be a lead or a lag effect into March of next year, where, you know, the 5 months period has to kick in. For example, many of our healthcare workers would have joined us later this year. You know, so their time period, their eligibility period will carry into early next year as well. So what I would say to your listeners, we will be making contact with you.
So people don't need to ring vaccination centres. People shouldn't be going online looking for their boosters. Somebody will text you from the HSC or whatever way it was originally rolled out. Contact will be made with the people themselves. Is that what's going to happen?
Yes, we're in a much stronger position now. We have all people's contact details. So we will be contacting those people as we walk through their approved age cohorts in this instance, and as they are coming to their eligibility period, we will be making contact with the public. So bear with us, we will be working through them all. We're resourcing up very significantly to deliver it, and we've made great progress on those most vulnerable groups already.
And a question for you, Paul, because we heard from NIAC last night that they have now authorised boosting the Johnson & Johnson jab after 3 months, not after 5 months. A huge number of young people got that jab. You know, I know my two kind of adult children got it back at the start of the summer, but that's the same as many, many young adults around the country. That, we're thinking, has about 3 months cover in it. So huge numbers of young people now, probably unvaccinated, coming and going as they please with vaccine certs that are probably invalid. Is it still that if you've got the Janssen jab, you need to be over 50 in order to be boosted, even though we think it only lasts 3 months?
Well, we will get the advice from National Immunisation Advisory Committee. So we still have to get that through the CMO, which will set out the criteria. But there is emerging and strong evidence across Europe of the increasing waning of the Johnson and Johnson.
I suppose I'm asking, should young people be boosted as well if they got that jab, considering that they may not now have cover?
Well, again, that will be the evidence base that NIAC will give ourselves. So to date, they have approved all the criteria that they have approved, medically vulnerable, and now 50s, and we're working through those.
So
we'll wait to see the definition of that.
We're hearing 50% of people who are due a booster are not turning up for their appointments.
I think it gets back, Ciara, to your earlier question to me, just in terms of the public. And so we have started quite a comprehensive campaign now around the boosters and giving people clarity around criteria for coming forward. And it did cause a level of concern where we've seen high levels of non-attendance at some centres. Now, I think it's a factor of a few things. First of all, the public understanding the need to come forward as we offer appointments. And that's really important for us because we are building a resource around making these appointments and people coming forward. Second, for people to understand then the real urgent need to come forward as these are offered to you. It is about protecting yourself further. It is about protecting the whole population as we move through a very difficult wave, and that's important. And thirdly, I would be saying to, I know that a lot of people are feeding back to us, they have difficulty getting away from work or their employment, to urge workers, urge enterprise and business to ensure facilitating workers to get to those appointments. But I think we will see that, and we will see it drastically improve.
We are hearing anecdotally into the show, because obviously we have a text line and people do, you know, tell us things, that one of the reasons people have missed booster appointments is because they're getting double appointments. They're getting one through a GP system, maybe one through a vaccination centre system. Is there a doubling up out there that needs to be looked at?
Yeah, look, we will look at all of that feedback, and there's no doubt if you look at some of the, I guess, the age groups that we're vaccinating right now at the minute, primarily those in their 70s are specifically being done by GPs, and over 130,000 of those are being done in a very short period, the last 10 days, and over 80s as well. But the 60s primarily, and healthcare workers are primarily focused for the vaccination centre. So we will look at that.
I'm glad you mentioned healthcare workers, because we spoke to SIP2 this morning, and they are very concerned about exemptions that might be brought in for healthcare workers about close contacts and self-isolation. Now, we understand, Paul, you are under pressure, the staff are under pressure, and you cannot have more people out of the workplace than is necessary. But is it reasonable to ask healthcare workers who are close contacts, who are vulnerable perhaps and maybe coming into the hospital system, to not self-isolate if they've been in contact with a case, just to prop up the system?
Now, look, firstly, I'm extremely conscious of my duty of care and our duty of care to our staff. And I did write out to the whole services yesterday acknowledging how exhausted, how frustrated they must be and are in terms of what they've had to manage through four waves now, and indeed a cyber attack. And I'm forever grateful, and I know the public are forever grateful for them. We are in a slightly different position as we head into this now. So the recent guidance from NIAC around people restricting their movements at home for 5 days if they are asymptomatic and taking the antigen tests. From our perspective, we now today have 4,400 staff who are out as either positive cases or symptomatic cases. Now, this would be a very significant impact for us on top of that. We're in a different position than we were last year, to the extent we now have our workforce fully vaccinated, primarily. And we are also, and we will be well progressed with our workforce in terms of the booster vaccine. So from our perspective, we will work this through. We're conscious of any concerns that trade unions will have and work it through. But we will be working through it in effort in terms of what we believe is an appropriate derogation.
Okay.
But we will work through the details.
And I presume the boosters will play a role in all that. Very briefly, and last question for you, just we're hearing a lot of people getting difficulty accessing PCR tests at the moment. How much pressure is the test and trace system under, Paul?
Just to give you a very brief scale of this, Ciara, you remember this 100,000 figure from last year that we said we need scale up to. And I remember in December of just last year, as we headed into the January surge, we were saying, you know, if we get to 2,000 cases, we'd be under stress. Last week alone, up to yesterday, for the last 7 days, 199,250 PCR tests have been completed in our labs, 180,000 community referrals specifically. And we are seeing days where we're doing 25,000 a day when we had an original capacity of 15,000 per day. So we have surged up hugely. 82% of the people in the last 7 days have got their appointment within 24 hours.
Okay.
What we are doing to strengthen further capacity even now is we have brought on board some private swabbing capacity, and we will be bringing some more of that on the next short while. We have Defence Forces working with us. We've National Ambulance Services doing some more pop-up clinics. And we are looking at other providers that can help us. But ultimately, this is a massive scale up, and 15%, nearly 16% positivity. We're seeing the volume. So we do have to prioritise those who are symptomatic. We do have to prioritise those who come through GP referrals. And I'd say to the public, bear with us. If you don't get it on the same day, you will get it the following day. So just bear with us.
All right. Look, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning on News Talk Breakfast. That is Paul Reid there, CEO of the HSC.